what was wrong. Hey, Kat, if it's not obvious what's wrong, you have to check all the connections. There's a sequence. I can talk you through it.
We're 30 seconds from the drop, came the Treasure Flight engineer's voice. I can't do this now.
Rose could do nothing but watch the screen while the bomber Treasure released the first delivery of the Atera airlift. The shells that carried the emergency supplies didn't have power bafflers or guidance systems. They simply relied on gravity, like ancient weaponry. Hammer, having switched places with Treasure, was brief minutes behind the other Star Fortress. Even so close, the shells were invisible on Rose's monitors. She could only assume that Treasure had been able to make its release. The first batch of the water, food, fuel, weaponry, and medical supplies that the Atarians so desperately needed. Treasure swung away from the drop, and Hammer took its place. For a couple of seconds over the target, Rose flipped the primary monitor to interior so she could watch the bomb bay doors opening. Nyx was on the job, and the doors were working smoothly. In agony over what was going on with Treasure's power baffler, Rose flipped the screen back to exterior so she could see the other bomber. Treasure was on its way back out into Atera Bravo's orbit now. Its pilot was trying to stay within the dark of the planet's night. Once they reached orbit, it would be all too easy to overshoot and end up in daylight. Treasure Tech? Kat? You ready for me to hold your hand? Rose called across space.
I'm sorry, Rose,
came Kat's voice.
I'm so, so sorry. It's all my fault.
He was still panting.
One of our bomb grips had seized up, and I'd gone down into the racks to help the bombardier loosen it. So it would release for the drop, and then after I came up the ladder to the flight deck again, I forgot to turn off my traction gloves. Just after we got out of hyperspace, I thought I should check the plugs in the baffler, and I climbed inside it, and I touched the plugs, and about a dozen of them stuck to the gloves and just pulled right out of the power wall, and then...
Rose realized from the clicking and rattling that was going on in the background that Kat was rapidly reconnecting plugs as he spoke to her.
And then I sort of grabbed at them with my other hand to stop them falling instinctively, I guess, and I pulled out another half a dozen by accident.
Oh, Kat, Rose sighed, partly out of frustration and partly secretly out of relief. This hadn't been her fault after all. Wish I could have been there to literally hold your hand, she said. Kat gave a quick, sharp bark of laughter.
I'll sit on my hands next time.
You going to get this fixed anytime soon? Rose asked. I want to help you check the sequencing, but we're about to make our own drop.
I'm on it, Rose. Call me when you're done, and I'll read you what I've got.
Thanks, Kat. Rose focused on her screen. The bomb bay doors were standing open. Then the edge of the screen sparkled as if it had been hit with an exploding snowball full of light. Rose felt it like a punch to the stomach. TIE fighters! She yelled. She heard the gasp from across Atera Bravo's orbit. She was still tuned in to the channel that let her talk to Treasure's flight engineer. 018, first quadrant high, 6 of them, just like before. Meanwhile, Finch flew steadily into the drop zone. The Resistance heavy bombers were committed now, whether or not there were TIE fighters around.
Cobalt bombers, proceed after me. Form up behind Hammer,
Finch ordered.
Lights out, everybody. Fly slow and steady. There's no reason they'll see us unless they come closer.
There was a reason, though. The fact that Treasure still showed up on the monitors as a great big power source in the middle of the night sky. The white sparks disappeared from the screen. Then they swarmed back into it. It felt like Rose had imaginary lights dancing in front of her eyes.
Keep an eye on those bandits,
Finch warned his crew, which of course was totally unnecessary, as Rose couldn't take her eyes off them, and she knew that in their crystal cages suspended in the tail and the foot of the Star Fortress, Spenny and Paige were anxiously scanning the skies for the incoming enemy as well. And then a terrible thing happened on Rose's screen. The outline of her own ship began to flicker exactly the way Treasure's had done. It faded in and out of focus like a poorly tuned hologram. Rose didn't wait for orders. She scrambled across the flight deck and slid on her back beneath the monstrously awkward piece of equipment that was the power baffler. Rose felt, rather than heard, Spenny's laser cannons firing on the other side of the magnetically sealed shield door next to her head. Again, she felt that hollow virtual gut punch of fear. Spenny wouldn't be firing unless they were under attack. Finch's voice, coming through Rose's headset, was anxious now.
We've picked up the ties.
We're leaking a power trace. I'm on it, Rose said through her teeth.
On it!
Echoed the tail gunner and Rose's sister, already engaged in battle. Chapter 11. Rose crawled underneath the lower panels of the body of the Baffler. This had been so much easier to do, wearing nothing but a tank top and work overalls. Now she was in a flight suit and a breather. But she managed to get beneath the awkward piece of equipment and sit up inside it at last. If I ever do this again, Rose thought, I will hang this thing in the bomb bay, or lay it down sideways. There's got to be an easier way. The innards of the device automatically lit up when it detected Rose's presence. What's your problem? She demanded. Sometimes it knew. Her headset translated the series of electronic beeps it gave her in answer. Synthesizer failure. Nuts and bolts, is that all? Rose pulled the synthesizer out of its slot and snapped a new one into place. It took about 4 seconds to fix. The Baffler beeped to thank you. Rose squeezed herself back out from underneath the awkward machine. Almost immediately, she collided with the tail gunner, Spenny, who was wheezing and clutching at her rebreather. Took a hit. I got one of the fighters, but it exploded close to the ship and a lot of flying debris hit my turret. The turret solid, but the darned gun sight shook itself off and came flying at me. It cut one of my air tubes. Take my guns while I seal this thing. You won't be able to aim with accuracy. Just blast away at anything you see. Spenny broke off, gasping, and sat down to deal with the torn tube. Rose climbed past her into the gunner seat in the tail turret. She didn't even have time to strap herself in before she had to start firing. Through her first volley of random laser blasts, Rose heard Finch call, Release! Seconds later came Nix's response. Bombs away! Rose hoped that the shells, plummeting planetward in the Ateran night, weren't obvious to the enemy attackers. She couldn't see the shells herself in the dark, and maybe the pilots in the remaining TIEs couldn't see them either. Maybe no report about the Resistance Bomber Squadron would make it back to wherever the enemy starfighters were based. Rose closed off this line of thought and concentrated on the battle. There seemed to be three of the TIEs still throwing themselves in fury at Hammer. In the heat of the conflict, Finch suddenly hurled the Star Fortress forward in a burst of speed. The sudden surge made Rose feel for a moment as if she were being yanked in half, as if the great ship were as fragile as a little one-seat landspeeder. Finch banked sharply. Far below her feet, Rose strained for a glimpse of Hammer's payload of supply canisters. But she couldn't see a thing, and they must have been gone by then.
I've got Rose's screen,
Nix told them all. As soon as the bombs were gone, he'd taken over Rose's monitor station.
Rose has got my guns, and I've got air,
Spenny gasped, reassuringly. I've got a bad feeling about this, thought Rose.
Hey, Rose,
came Paige's calm voice through the headset.
Good to have you up there.
It wasn't good, Rose thought. The TIEs whizzed back and forth across the sky, tacking, and came soaring in for another attack on Hammer. Rose blasted at the night randomly, knowing in the pit of her stomach that she didn't have a hope of hitting anything. It was terrifying. But at least if she and Paige were going to die, they'd die together.
I can't see treasure anymore,
Nix reported from the monitor. Treasure tech? What's going on? Rose called anxiously, still connected to the other ship. There was a moment of crackling interference, and then Kat's voice came through with confidence.
We're out of Bravo's orbit. We're back in the Atera Belt. Our Baffler's fine, and we're on course for the hyperspace jump as soon as we clear the asteroid maze.
We'll miss you, said Rose. Treasure was on its own now, and she had other things to worry about. Without the gunsight, it was impossible to get a decent fix on any of the attacking TIEs. Outside the tail gun turret, Rose could see them whizzing by in the dark like meteors, swarming around the heavy bomber. Hammer's shields were holding against the cannon fire, but they couldn't hold forever.
Woohoo!
Paige suddenly gave a whoop that rang in Rose's head, and below her, Rose saw the lower portions of the bomber light briefly with the sunny glow of an explosion.
Got you!
Paige yells.
Got you, you arrogant little space spider!
Wow, your competitive streak is showing! Rose laughed in spite of herself. Paige's usual calm had been shaken. Did that mean there were only two of the evil things still flying around out there? Did that mean the Cobalt Bomber Squadron actually had a chance of winning? From behind them in the dark, Rose saw a blast of cannon fire slice straight into one of the zooming fighter silhouettes. There was an explosion of radiance in the middle of the night sky. Rose had a perfect view. It was like watching a light show. Behind Hammer, moving forward to its own drop in the dark, the bomber Cobalt Bell had taken out one of the ties. Seconds later, another blast came from behind Bell. Cobalt Mare had also entered the fray.
"Hang in there, kids," Finch called. "I'm powering us down until the rest of the squadron have made their drops. The guns will still be active, but don't fire unless you absolutely have to. I want to use the dark to keep us hidden. The other forts will cover us. Get ready to wait. We'll be the last to leave."
He paused and added ominously,
"If we last that long, that is."
Rose sat behind her sightless guns in the dark, knowing she'd never be able to target the lone TIE fighter that was swooping around out there. The skin at the back of her neck crawled at the thought that it might fire at her and blow her out of the sky at any moment. Hammer might survive a direct hit to the tail turret, but Rose wouldn't. She sat quietly, not firing at the empty sky. She watched Bell as it flew in below Hammer and emptied its own bomb bays. She wondered where the other TIE fighter was. The bomber Mare followed Bell into the drop zone.
"Bell, get out of here,"
Finch commanded.
"Don't wait around for the rest of us. If that last TIE escaped..."
The pilot let the sentence go unfinished, but Rose thought he was probably thinking exactly what she was thinking. If the last TIE had retreated, flown back to its base without taking the risk of attacking 5 armed Starfortress bombers on its own, the pilot of that fighter would without a doubt report the conflict he'd engaged in over a Terra Bravo. And then the First Order would know exactly whom to expect and where to expect them the next time the bombers made the airlift run into a Terra. It wasn't a pleasant thought. But at least for now, there was no one shooting at them.
"Mare's done,"
Finch reported from the pilot's cockpit.
"Crimson Dancer is on the way in, and then there's just Crimson Bolide left. After that, we'll get out of here. Stay where you are, Rose. Spenny's connected to the main oxygen supply and can't get back to the tail turret. Nix, you've got the tech monitors covered?"
"I'm on it,"
Nix confirmed. Rose suddenly remembered that she wasn't strapped in. She wriggled into Spenny's harness and waited for Dancer and Bolide to make their drops. There was no sign of the last TIE fighter. The last 2 bombers sailed away into a Terra Bravo's outer orbit at last, and Finch veered after them and headed toward the Terra Belt and beyond that, the safety of hyperspace. It didn't seem to take very long. Maybe Finch was getting the hang of navigating the complex system of explosive mines and asteroids. Soon enough came that breathless moment of the jump to light speed. Starlight filled the turret in Rose's eyes, then disappeared behind them. They'd made the drop. The ship was intact. All the ships were intact. Nobody was hurt. From their separate corners of the Star Fortress, Rose and the rest of the crew joined voices in a cheer of victory and relief. They were safe and alone again in the limitless, peaceful, mottled blue of hyperspace.
"Get back down here, Rose," Paige said. "Let's ride back to Refnew together."
"How many of those TIE fighters did you actually hit yourself?" Rose asked her sister. Summer on Refnew meant that the dark blue daylight would last late into the evening, but a sleet storm was lashing the docking bays, and the resistance crews could hardly hear each other's shouted greetings. All 11 bombers were safely back in port, and their crews were meeting on foot on the wharf for their mission debriefing, including those ships that had been icebreaking and those that had made the first airlift run to Aterra.
"I got 3 of them, and I'm not even flying a fighter ship,"
Paige caught her breath. She didn't do a lot of boasting, but she was obviously pleased with herself.
3 TIE fighters," Rose repeated.
"Wow. Should I start calling you Master Paige? Are you a Jedi or something?" Rose only half meant it as a joke. She was in awe of Paige's gunnery skill, and really, of every other skill her older sister possessed. Paige laughed at Rose's teasing. "When they're flying straight at you, it's not hard to see them." It had been hard to aim at them, though, Rose remembered with a shiver. Of course Paige had had a working gun sight, but still. "Bet it makes you wish you were flying a starfighter," Rose said.
"I never even think about that when I'm shooting," Paige said.
"But you know what?
It explains why I get so frustrated when they fly out of range. I can't fly after them.
You know what that means, Rose reminded her. One of them got away.
Paige turned to Rose and stared at her, alarmed and frowning.
Are we sure about that?
No one can confirm shooting it, Rose said. Maybe that TIE pilot doesn't know how many of us there were. But he's going to make a report, for sure.
It was a sobering thought.
Fossil had come along to Refnu to manage her squadrons. Casca Panzoro was with her, anxious to hear how the first rescue mission to her homeworld had gone. Casca and Fossil, along with the bomber unit's flight surgeon, Tiggs Kaga, met with the Star Fortress crews on the wharf. When they'd begun to gather, Fossil pointed at the supply transport that had come with the squadrons. 5 dozen or so bomber crew members, plus ground personnel, made their way through the service hatch and gathered on the loading floor of the transport, where there were portable heaters set up.
The rumor is that the first Atera run turned into quite the adventure,
quipped Fossil.
Tiggs is delighted you brought yourselves back with no more damage than a sound night's sleep will easily repair.
Everyone murmured.
Of course.
Yes. No problem. The Star Fortress squadron teams adored their old lady, despite her terrifying appearance. She managed to make every single one of them feel indispensable.
Casca Panzoro has a few words with which she would like to grace you.
The district representative of the Firestone Islands gave Fossil a sober, grateful glance and stood straight before the gathered assembly.
Thank you, said Casca Panzoro. Thank you. The gratitude in her voice and on her face was warm and full of relief. It made her look younger.
Even if the rest of this mission doesn't go as planned, thank you for beginning it. Thank you for believing in us. Thank you for your lives, your gifts, your generosity, but most of all, your trust. Casca paused and added in a low voice, May the Force be with you.
There was an awkward little moment's silence, and then the bomber crews broke into spontaneous applause. After a few moments, Fossil quieted them down by lifting her large hand.
Well spoken,
Casca, she said, and Casca moved aside to let Fossil take control of the assembly again. Fossil set to business straight away.
I will be pleased if the Baffler technicians can give me full reports on what went wrong. Afterward, I will be following the maintenance teams as we make ready for tomorrow's shipment. There is ample fuel for all ships tomorrow and the next day, but for our final mission, the transport must return for fuel to...
Fossil paused and rumbled as if she were clearing her throat. There was to be no mention of Dakar on this assignment, just in case someone might be listening.
To the main depot,
she finished blandly.
First, let us discuss today's events.
The summer sleet storm was in full howl when Fossil dismissed everybody. Now Rose had to go along with each of the flight engineers to check that all was in place for the next day's bombing run. She was grateful no one from Refnu seemed to guess that 11 of the 5 dozen ships moored there had a secret purpose that had nothing to do with excavating ore from the surface of an isolated world. Before Rose did anything else, though, she went along with Kat to make sure he'd rewired all of Treasure's baffler plugs correctly. The Refnu native was a hulking young man, so big-boned and bulky that he towered 2 full heads taller than Rose, and she was surprised to find him huddling against her and hanging on her elbow as they battled the wind. Rose wasn't very big. She couldn't have been much support in the storm's deep dusk while they crossed the docks. As they entered the bay where the heavy bomber Treasure loomed, its massive height swaying slightly in the wind as if it couldn't wait to take off again, Kat ducked his head and shouted into the storm, making an excuse for himself.
I hate being outside, he said, turning sheepishly away from Rose but still hanging onto her arm. I'd rather be sitting in a bomber that's going up in flames than standing out here in the wind. Are you kidding? You grew up here on Refnu.
He shook his head, huddling in the shelter of the bomber Treasure while Rose got the hatch open at the bottom of the empty clip that hadn't been replaced yet.
I grew up inside. We never went out if we could help it.
I don't mind flying in a storm, but I don't like being out in it.
Rose let Kat climb into the bomber first, and she let him sit down for a moment to catch his breath while she powered up the ground-based light and heat systems. They couldn't get up the ladder past the bomb racks in their bulky outdoor gear, and it would take a minute or so for the interior of the Star Fortress to warm up enough for them to take off their parkas.
Wow, Rose said, waiting with him. I guess you usually use the tunnels to get around.
I sure do.
Kat glanced up at her and said in a low voice, I'll tell you a secret. When I'm on a bombing run, and we're skimming the surface of some inner planet, when it's day and there aren't any clouds, and all you can see above you is blue sky, and it's so bright you have to wear filters, I pray to every atom in the galaxy that I won't ever have to stand outside, unprotected, and look up at an empty sky like that. All that space. It scares me so bad it makes me sick. I don't even like being in the cockpits when we're flying. Darn right I grew up on Refnu. We don't have windows here. I like to see walls. Listening to Kat talk, Rose grew suddenly aware of the smooth pendant lying against her skin beneath the layers of protective clothing, the piece of ore from the Automox system that her parents had given her, the piece of home she shared with her sister, a hard keepsake from a cold, dark world bound with ice clouds. Like Kat, Rose had grown up on an ice-bound planet where the living quarters never had windows, and people worked underground or onboard insulated ships. Rose loved her destroyed home fiercely. But she wasn't like Kat at all. She longed to stand outside, unprotected, and look up at a bright and empty sky. She thought about it while she and Kat counted circuit sequences, and she couldn't understand it at all. Chapter 12. Fossil was waiting for them when they descended to ground level again.
All well?
Fossil rumbled.
I know what a responsibility this is for you, Rose Tico.
It's all good, said Rose, not sure she meant it, but knowing it was what Fossil wanted to hear.
She didn't think Fossil realized how much the responsibility scared her. We had trouble with Treasure's power baffler on this run, but Kat knew exactly what to do.
I have a request for you, Rose Tico. Wasp's flight engineer is struggling to adjust to the climate here on Refnu. She returned sick and shaking after the journey to the ice mines today, and Tiggs wants her to rest for a day under the sun lamps before she flies again. If your bombardier Nyx were to cover your monitors, could you fly with Wasp on tomorrow's mission to Aterra in place of their technician?
Rose nearly said yes. It was such a simple, reasonable request. But something inside her began to unravel a little and stopped her from answering right away. Then, when she did answer, Rose found herself trying to make an excuse.
Leave Nyx on his own with the baffler? No way. He doesn't understand the little monster.
I am surprised,
Fossil commented.
You are usually one who obeys commands. Yet now, when called upon for support, you criticize another skill. You have trained the other flight engineers. You can train your bombardier. You know this. What is your real objection?
Rose knew that the truth had nothing to do with obeying commands. She hesitated, then admitted softly, I've never flown without my sister. She didn't think she could fly without Paige. Kat stood listening, hanging back a step or two without interrupting, a little embarrassed.
You have always, before, accommodated my requests,
Fossil said. She seemed curious, rather than angry.
You have never refused.
Aware of Kat listening, Rose flailed to make herself sound less cowardly.
I'm like one of those sonar swallows. I can only fly as one of a pair.
Ugh, she thought. That doesn't sound funny, just super sentimental. Rose added unhappily. I know I'm the tech support for the power bafflers, but I just don't want to fly without Paige. Rose thought of Reef Panzoro, and of how he'd accused her of never being able to make a decision without getting Paige's okay. But Rose knew this was different. This had nothing to do with what Paige thought.
The fear that Rose scrunched into a ball in a corner of her brain while she was focused on an operational bombing run, while she was climbing from the bomb bay to the tech monitors, scrambling around in the innards of the Baffler, or emerging to take over the damaged guns of the tail turret. That fear stayed put because Rose knew Paige was down there in calm control of the laser cannons beneath the bomb bays. She knew that Paige was down there, waiting for Rose to join her again when the danger was past. See you then, Rose. It wasn't a question of decision-making. Rose couldn't imagine flight without Paige.
This is an awkward time to demonstrate lack of moral fiber,
Fossil told Rose coolly.
It is the day before a mission in which you are a vital component.
I know. I'm sorry. Paige doesn't know, Rose apologized. Couldn't you swap her around too, so we could fly together? You said when we joined the Resistance that you'd always let us fly in the same crew. Fossil gazed down at Rose with unreadable wide crystalline silver eyes, bemused. Kat said suddenly, I'll go. Rose and Fossil both turned to look at him. Kat gave Rose a smile. She remembered how he'd confessed his secret fear to her, his fear of being outside. He understood fear. Sure, I'll go, Kat repeated. Why not? I made a mistake today I'm not likely to make again. I know the circuit sequences for the power bafflers by heart now. I don't need to adjust to the climate at all. This is my home. I'll go with Wasp as their technician and Rose can stay with her own crew. Rose and Kat looked to Fossil for approval. Their commander shrugged.
Your cooperation as a unit, as always, moves and pleases me,
she said in her rumbling voice. She hadn't said yes yet, though. Rose bit her lip, waiting for the final decision. The old lady nodded.
Sonar swallows, indeed. No one has used that as an excuse before.
Thank you, Rose breathed. Thank you, Fossil. Thank you, Kat. What a goof you are, Rose, Paige told her fondly as they sat squeezed tight together in the lower gun turret during the next day's hyperspace journey to Aterra for the second airlift bombing run. Cute, but a goof. Shut up. Rose felt self-conscious about her stubborn and childish insistence on flying with her big sister. Fossil hadn't mentioned the request to the other crew members, but Kat had said something to Paige about Rose's sisterly devotion, and Rose didn't want to talk about it. Paige heard the tone of Rose's voice, though, and she got it. She apologized. You know I'm teasing. I'm a little jealous of how indispensable you are to this mission. You're jealous of me? Said Rose, who felt that she would never be as multi-talented, as calm, or as respected as her older sister. Did you hit your head on one of those Aterra asteroids? I'm totally serious, Paige assured her. Everyone's a little scared of those bafflers. And it's not because they don't trust them, it's because they're so impressed that you managed to scrape together such a complicated piece of equipment in such a short time. I was talking to Cutter and Hornet's technicians about it in the cafeteria last night. They're all worried they'll make some dumb mistake like Kat did, and just knowing you're there to talk to them makes them feel reassured. They're very glad you're here. It was Rose's turn to tease. You're always gossiping. But she felt warm inside, and a little sick with the awful responsibility of being in charge of them all. Gotta get up to the flight deck for our return to real space, Rose added. See you on the way back to Refnu. Paige was calm as always. See you then, Rose, she answered. Four Cobalt Squadron heavy bombers, with two Crimson Squadron bombers supporting them, began to emerge from hyperspace on the outside of the Aterra Belt. It was quiet there. The complex space ahead of them loomed ominously, but the outer planetary orbit of the Aterra system seemed wholly empty. It was as peaceful as the limitless, mottled blue of hyperspace. Rose, watching the monitors, saw the shape of Crimson Cutter first, then Cobalt Wasp and Scarab appeared on the screen, their unwieldy, familiar, bulky outlines reassuring. Hammer entered the asteroid maze just after Cobalt Hornet and Crimson Hailstorm emerged from hyperspace. As soon as the asteroids of the Atera Belt blocked the other bombers from Hammer's line of sight, they winked off the monitors. The power bafflers were all working. The bombers were on their own as they navigated the Atera Belt. They'd regroup on the other side to enter Atera Bravo's orbit in formation. The Resistance bombers couldn't see each other as they flew through the Atera Belt, but they could talk to each other, and with each trip, they mapped more booby traps. They were beginning to be able to guess the size and nature of the asteroids likely to hide in automatic cannon. They were also getting better at gauging the perfect distance for avoiding laser fire while still being able to use the asteroids to hide behind. But Rose's heart was hammering in her chest as they made their way between the asteroids. She was expecting an attack the whole way in. That one escaped TIE yesterday had surely reported them. But there was nothing. The belt was quiet. The attack came as they flew toward Atera Bravo on the other side of the belt. Hammer took the initial fury of the enemy fire. Seconds after they emerged from the cover of the Atera Belt, a squadron of TIE fighters came streaking straight after them. With the attack coming from behind, the bomber Hammer was lucky enough to be between the TIEs and the sun, and Finch immediately veered to take advantage of having the light at their back. He unleashed a blaze of laser fire from the forward cannons. As the clutch of the TIEs shot back, Hammer's shields held. The six TIEs went screaming away toward Atera Bravo's knight before wheeling in for another attack. But now Spenny and Paige, in their rearward-facing gun turrets, were able to get a good shot at them. Hammer met the second attack with furious gunfire. Rose was in agony, though. Nix was remotely controlling the cannons in the dorsal turret from the bombardier's computer pedestal. But there was absolutely nothing Rose herself could do to help the fight. She looked out over the pilot's shoulder, trying not to get in Finch's way. She could feel the ship shuddering as the TIEs fired on them from behind. Finch was tense, waiting for the attack to move around to the front. A split second later, he was firing like fury again. Rose backed away into the windowless bulk of the fuselage. There was something suffocating about being able to see this attack without being able to fire back. It was worse than sitting in a gunner's turret under fire herself. Then it occurred to Rose that there was something she could do. She could warn the other bombers so that they wouldn't be taken by surprise when they came out of the protective camouflage of the Atera Belt. Rose hit the general comm button fixed to her headset, the feature she now shared with the pilot so that she'd be able to talk to the technicians and the other bombers without having to be patched in.
"There are TIE fighters inside the belt," she yelled. "Alert your crew!"
Crimson Cutter's flight engineer reported from his station, where Rose knew he must have his eyes glued to the monitors.
"I see them. Wasp is covering us. We're coming to help you."
Another handful of white lights appeared on Rose's monitor. Her heart sank.
"Wasp and Cutter, defend yourselves, not us," Rose cried. "Scarab, Hornet, Hailstorm, tell your gunners to look sharp."
She didn't even think about the fact that she was shouting commands at flight crews she had no business being in charge of. It never occurred to her she had no authority to tell them how to fly their mission. She was just trying desperately to warn them, to save them from disaster. From the lower gun turret, Paige had seen the new clutch of TIEs and called in a frantic warning cry for the rest of Cutter's crew.
"Bandits! Bandits! Beware, Cutter! TIE fighters on Crimson Cutter! Somebody tell them there's another clutch of TIEs coming for Cutter!"
The Cutter technician's voice then came through sounding just as frantic, and Rose, staring at her own monitor, knew why.
"I see four more squadrons inbound!" he cried. "The first must have sounded an alert when they found us and called for reinforcements!"
The monitor screens were dazzling with white sparks. They came in clustered handfuls from three directions at once, in addition to the individual fighters that were already focused on Hammer. The Star Fortress shook with the impact of the shots against the blast shields, with the action of the gunners firing back, and with the movement of Finch's evasive weaving. With swift and purposeful calculation, one of the approaching squadrons of fighters swarmed toward the incoming bomber Wasp. Another squadron went after Scarab. The third and fourth approaching squadron of TIEs held back. They were waiting for Hornet and Hailstorm. There was a whole squadron of TIE fighters ready to take on every one of the Resistance bombers. Another squadron arrived as Rose watched the screen. The bomber Hammer somehow continued to hold its own. Rose's screen swarmed so thickly with the white traces of the TIEs that she couldn't tell how many of them Hammer's guns had managed to defeat. She thought the shocks coming at the ship were not as frequent as they'd been. Unformed bolts of hope stabbed through her head. Last time we were okay. Maybe if we just get the ones after us, maybe we can get through this first attack. That was when Wasp's trace on the technical monitor suddenly vanished. There was no great burst of noise to announce the moment. No deafening roar of the blast that obliterated the ship as there would have been if it had happened inside a planet's atmosphere. There was a dull crackle of static as Wasp's comms went blank, and then silence in the space where the ship had been. At the same time, Paige and Spenny gave simultaneous wordless cries of anguish. They'd seen the explosion. The TIEs that had been surrounding Wasp swooped away, splitting off into twos, and each pair joined one of the squadrons attacking the remaining bombers. For a few moments, Rose's brain refused to believe it. Then, we've lost an entire ship. Kat's ship. What had he said to her the night before? I hate being outside. I'd rather be sitting in a bomber that's going up in flames than standing out here in the wind. She thought of his tall, bulky, Refnian body, crammed inside Wasp's baffler, frantically struggling with the plugs. But no, there hadn't been anything wrong with Wasp's baffler. Kat would have been staring at the tech screens just as Rose was now, watching the storm of white sparks that were the TIE fighters dancing in and out among the slower shapes of the Resistance star fortresses. Had the ship exploded so suddenly that Kat didn't know what was happening? 1 minute feeling secure in an enclosed space, and the next, he'd flown in her place. Fossil had asked Rose to fly on Wasp, and Kat had taken her place. Rose knew she couldn't think about it, not now. She'd lost people before, crew members and family both. In the middle of a battle, she couldn't think about it. In the middle of a battle, there were other things to think about. 3 dozen TIE fighters. How many of that first squadron were still pursuing Hammer, joined now by 2 of the clutch that had blasted Wasp out of the sky? There were 8 of the ferocious sparks drilling into Scarab's outline on the screen now. Finch, Rose begged over the internal comm to Hammer's pilot. We should abort the mission. She gulped in another breath and hurried on. We should turn back now. We can't keep up a battle like this all the way to Bravo's surface, and if we do, we'll give away the position of our scheduled drops. You've got to give the command.
I was going to anyway, Finch gasped, just waiting for someone else to suggest it.
But he was too busy defending his own ship to give the order right away. Firing back at the attackers, he veered suddenly planetward.
You're heading into the minefield, Paige yelled.
I know.
The Star Fortress couldn't make a tight turn, but Finch suddenly threw on full power and soared in a different direction. 3 of the TIEs, over-enthusiastic in their pursuit, and knowing they had superior maneuverability, flew straight into the minefield and exploded within seconds. The pilot didn't waste a moment on triumph.
Cobalt Squadron, Crimson Support, retreat!
Finch yelled as the other starfighters careened out of his reach for a moment.
All bombers retreat! Don't wait!
The command came too late. Hornet had already emerged behind Scarab. One of the unoccupied squadrons of TIEs was ready for it. They came leaping out of their holding pattern to attack. They were picking off the Resistance heavy bombers like beads off a string, just waiting for them to appear and shooting them out of the sky as easily and predictably as a line of gaming targets. Finch had given the order to retreat, but he hadn't shown any inclination to move Hammer out of the line of fire.
You getting out or not?
Nix called to Hammer's pilot. The bombardier got no response at first. As before, Finch was firing at one of the approaching starfighters as it screamed back for another deadly swooping pass. The explosion, when Finch hit the TIE, was close enough that for half a second it floodlit the entire interior of the bomber's fuselage with a deep and flickering golden glow.
Got to see it through for the rest of them, I think,
Finch grunted.
I'm trying to stay close to Cutter so we can give them some cover. We're responsible, he added,
as he guided the Star Fortress to dive away through the cloud of gleaming cinders that was all that was left of the TIE fighter he'd just destroyed.
Don't you think? You with me? Sure we are,
sighed Nix.
Here.
Confirmed Paige, briefly from the lower gun turret, and Spenny echoed.
Here.
Rose answered with more gloom than usual. Ready for anything. Finch began.
Because I think I...
He didn't finish the sentence. His words were cut off as the last of Scarab shields fell and the surrounding enemy starfighters moved in on the defenseless Star Fortress to finish the job. The dreadful thing about Scarab's destruction was that Rose and Finch tuned in to common frequencies so they could communicate with the rest of the Resistance bombers, could hear the crew screams as the ship burned. For a terrible 30 seconds, in a fit of panic, Rose switched off her headset so she didn't have to listen. It was the longest 30 seconds of her life. When there was nothing left on the screen where Scarab's outline had been, Rose flipped her headset's power back on. Finch was shouting,
"Retreat! Retreat! Retreat!"
Chapter 13. Cutter had disappeared from Rose's screen. She didn't know if it was because they'd also been destroyed, or because they'd made it back into the shelter of the Atera Belt and the line of sight was broken. "Crimson Cutter!" she called. "Cutter Tech, can you hear me?" There was no answer. Hailstorm, the last of the heavy bombers to emerge from the maze of asteroids, had already changed direction. The TIEs that had lain in wait for it were streaking toward it, but hadn't reached it yet, and Hailstorm was traveling at top speed back toward the belt. Rose's heart vaulted with a sudden overdose of hope and gladness. The adrenaline rush lasted about half a second, and then she stopped watching, because Hailstorm wasn't her concern anymore. Nor was Cutter or Wasp or Scarab. Besides Hammer itself, there was only Hornet left. On the monitors, Hornet made a wide loop. Like Hammer, it didn't have a very tight turning circle. The remaining TIE fighters whizzed back and forth around it like a flock of sonar swallows mobbing someone who stood singing at the top of her voice in the Dakar forest. Except the birds of Dakar didn't deliver deadly blasts of laser fire as they came flying close. Rose saw a few of the dazzling enemy images go dark as the Resistance gunners managed to destroy some of the TIE fighters. But there were too many for the heavy bombers to destroy them all. Their only hope now lay in escape. The bomber Hornet finished making its turn, and Finch put on a burst of speed to try to fly close behind the other Star Fortress.
"Safety in numbers,"
Finch panted.
"If any of those bandits come between us, we'll get them. Not for the love of a loaded stun gun."
He broke off, cursing, as something solid hit the top of the cockpit.
"Are the shields holding?"
Spenny asked anxiously from the tail turret.
"Just about,"
Finch grunted, concentrating on flight. Rose could see the problem on the monitors. Pieces of the destroyed bombers were getting in their path. "The sky's full of debris," she told the crew. "But that's not a bad thing. It's helping us."
"Yeah, I saw a TIE collide with the chunk of scrap metal a second ago,"
Paige confirmed.
"Those TIEs are going so fast they can't get out of the way,"
said Finch.
"We're big enough it doesn't hurt us, but what a mess."
He broke off suddenly and said in quiet defeat,
"They got Hornet."
Hammer flew through the explosion. It helped keep the TIE fighters away from the bomber as Hammer made its lonely escape back through the asteroids and then, finally, to the quiet blue safety of hyperspace. When the bomber Hammer entered real space just beyond Refnu, Rose was relieved to see that Hailstorm's familiar shape was moving steadily ahead of them. Three Cobalt Squadron ships were never coming back, and there was no sign of the other Crimson Bomber. No one spoke more than was required as they went through the landing sequence. The Hammer crew didn't even speak to each other after they'd docked and were struggling into their weather suits. Paige reached out to squeeze Rose's hand. That was it. At last, Finch said,
"We're to report to the old lady for debriefing in Common Room 23 in the Harbormaster's complex. She called in while I was docking. That Bravo Rising Resistance leader will be there too. Hailstorm's crew is all right."
Miraculously, no one on board Hammer had been hurt either. They tumbled into the debriefing room and struggled out of their weather suits again. For a moment, all was chaos as the two surviving crews rushed into one another's arms.
The room Fossil had managed to set aside for them was much too big for the 12 people gathered there. Fossil had been expecting to accommodate more than 30. Hailstorm's pilot and Spenny began to sob. Everyone else was silent.
Please sit. Get warm.
There are blankets and protein portions and hot drinks, Fossil pointed.
We have a surprise for you.
Casca Pinzora was presiding over a very ancient portable organic synthicator, which shuddered with the effort of producing something edible out of a mixture of powdered starches. After a moment, Fossil crossed over to it and opened the production drawer, rolled back the lid, and with delicate, enormous fingers, flicked away a layer of styro chips. Beneath the protective chips lay four round fruits about the size of Rose's fist. They were the flaming color of a Dakar sunset.
Starberries? Breathed Hailstorm's pilot. Where on this winter planet?
It is no tree-grown fruit,
Fossil explained.
Nothing real. They are synthicated clones. The image of starberries. As the inhabitants of Refnu live beneath the image of sunlight within their windowless walls.
Rose had never seen such a thing. She stared, along with every other crew member of the returning heavy bombers.
It's synthetic, but it's still fresh fruit, Casca said. It won't last two of this planet's long days. You're working and dying for us, for a pair of distant worlds that most of you have never set foot on. She looked up, with the fleeting warm glance that made her seem younger. You're not expecting any payment. As far as I can tell, your sacrifice is for nothing other than the satisfaction of being able to fight for what you believe in.
Take this fruit and eat it in memory of your fallen comrades,
Fossil said. She pulled the drawer free of the synthicator and held it forward.
Pilots and flight engineers first. We will make a second and third small harvest for the gunners and bombardiers. And I will hear your report while we wait.
Fossil, Casca, and the gunners and bombardiers of both ships watched solemnly while the pilots and technicians ate the rosy synthicated fruit. Rose looked around her as she nibbled at the astonishingly crisp, sweet flesh. It seemed utterly unreal after the harsh brutality of the last terror run, and she could tell that Finch and the Hailstorm crew members felt the same way. Their faces were as drained and passionless as if they were eating dust. They were forcing it down as a ritual. In memory of your fallen comrades.
Tell me how it began,
Fossil said. Haltingly, and with many corrections and interruptions, the Hailstorm and Hammer crews began to tell the story of the day's failed mission. By the time they'd finished, Casca had created two more batches of starberries for the rest of the Star Fortress crews. Fossil passed the fruit around without speaking, except to prompt the pilots or gunners to continue their tale. But when they'd exhausted what they had to say, and Hailstorm's pilot started to cry again, Fossil gave her throat-clearing rumble and began to ask unsettling and probing questions.
Describe again what you saw on the screen, Rose Tico, as you watched Hailstorm flying from the carnage. How was it that the bomber Hailstorm managed to escape the fate of the others?
They were the last in line. They were able to turn around in time. By the time the enemy squadron got close to them, they were already back in the asteroid belt and I guess...
Rose hesitated, because she didn't actually know what had happened after that. Hailstorm's pilot shrugged. He rubbed his eyes, gave one last sob, and spoke, steadily. He said, "We got lucky. Two of the fighters on our tail collided with one of the asteroids, and we lost the others for a little while, and we were ready for the lightspeed jump the second we were out of the asteroid belt. We couldn't have done it without the shields or the power bafflers or the gunners." The pilot glanced over at his own gunners, both fur-covered humanoids. They were seated side by side with arms clasped over each other's shoulders. Hailstorm's pilot and gunners exchanged a quiet moment, communicating only with their eyes. Mainly, we couldn't have done it without the gunners, Hailstorm's pilot amended. But we couldn't have done it without the command to retreat, either. Or if we hadn't been the furthest back in the line.
Ah.
Vassal turned back to Finch and his crew.
The order in the lineup mattered. I would like to hear them, Hammer Crew. You were first in line. You were first out. First fired on, and last to leave. What is the reason you believe you were spared?
Rose and her crewmates all stared at each other in bewilderment. Until this moment, it hadn't occurred to them that there might be any reason other than the ones the Hailstorm pilot had just mentioned. Plus Finch's own ability as a pilot. Good luck, the shields, the power baffler, and Paige and Spenny's accuracy when firing the laser cannons. But they'd been under fire for longer, and with more of the ties on top of them, than any of the other heavy bombers.
I guess maybe they let us go, Finch said slowly.
Rose saw Paige nodding. They might have wanted a ship they could trace, Paige guessed. They might have wanted to follow us back to wherever we came from. They might have suspected you of coming from a base on a Terra Alpha, perhaps, and wanted to track you there, suggested Casca Panzoro. Or even from one of the asteroids in the Atera Belt. Some of them have settlements. And because you got away through hyperspace, they'll know now that you're coming from outside the system.
We shall check the holes,
rumbled Fossil.
They may have successfully planted a tracking device during the battle. We will take no risks. Yes, Nix?
They might have wanted to take prisoners, Hammer's Bombardier croaked, as if it had just occurred to him. If they disabled us enough to board us, or to hold us until another ship arrived, they could have tried to question us, or... He finished raggedly. We know a lot.
I trust you would have had the sense to destroy yourselves before such a thing happened,
Fossil said dryly. Rose and Finch nodded in agreement so quickly that Fossil never even had a chance to doubt their resolve. Rose would never let herself be taken prisoner by anyone in the First Order. If she had to blow herself and her sister up together, she'd do it. She exchanged a piercing glance with Paige and knew that her sister felt the same way. Rose felt even more certain about it now than she'd felt before the day's disastrous events.
So, the tie that escaped on your first trip reported back to the First Order Patrol Masters in Atera Alpha, who saw to it that an ambush was lying in wait for you on your second trip. We have failed to make our second drop. We have lost nearly an entire airlift supply shipment, along with four bombers and their associated crew. We have little time to spare, but we will not fly to Atera tomorrow. We need to prepare our spirits and consider a new strategy before we risk ourselves in another suicidal mission.
Vassal turned away from the two remaining crews, and Rose suddenly realized that the overbearing, authoritative unit commander was as broken with grief and loss as her own crews were.
We will speak again tomorrow,
the old lady said quietly.
And then we shall move forward.
Her large, shining silver hand caught the artificial light as she dismissed them. In the middle of the night, Rose was woken up from a fitful, fire-filled sleep by Paige stroking her face and saying her name over and over.
Rose! Rose! Wake up! Good news!
Rose sat up instantly, banging her head on the top of the sleeping bay. She was on the upper level, and there wasn't room to sit up there. Below her, where Paige stood, the soft blue light they were allowed to game or chat by during quiet hours was illuminating Paige's bunk.
Come down! Come join us, Rose!
Rose rolled over and swung down by Paige's side. There, sitting on Paige's bunk, was their friend Venny,
who'd flown as the pilot for the bomber cutter. Rose actually rubbed her eyes.
What? How in the name of all galaxies?
Cutter came back,
Paige explained simply, her eyes shining. Rose leaped at Venny and hugged her spontaneously. Like Paige, Venny was a multi-talented pilot. She sometimes flew an A-wing, going along as an escort for the bombers. But now, since there was no fighter escort for them, she was doubling as a Star Fortress pilot. Paige drew Rose down next to her so that all three of them were sitting tight together in the low blue light of Paige's bunk. Paige squeezed in between Rose and Venny. Paige curled one protective and comforting arm fondly around each of their backs on either side of her.
Our hyperdrive was damaged in the fight, explained Venny. We made it out of the Atera system, but stalled out of light speed in some backwater on the outer rim. We couldn't even find a place to land, just sat orbiting some worldless star for a while. We spent 12 hours floating there, regenerating power and tying the ship back together. That's why it took us so long. I don't know how you techs do it, to tell the truth. Ours managed to fix the hyperdrive with parts from your power baffler.
No way! Rose couldn't help laughing.
You'll have to ask our tech what he did. Actually, someone's bound to talk to you about it. Because he had to break up the power baffler to get the hyperdrive to work. And you'll have to rebuild it.
I will totally do that without complaining, Rose vowed. Since it got you back here somehow.
Well, that's what we do best, isn't it? Said Paige. Work together, without complaining.
Rose rolled her eyes. I complain.
You're the little sister. You're allowed to complain.
I wouldn't, if you weren't so bossy, Rose teased.
Paige and Venny both laughed. It felt good to tease a little. It felt good to have something to be glad about.
Venny said, I came straight to the Tico sisters after we docked, because we wouldn't be here without you. Thank you both for saving our lives. We'd never have managed to bum our way out of Atera without being seen if it hadn't been for that power baffler. And we'd never even have gotten that far if it hadn't been for Hammer covering us with your guns when those starfighters first attacked us.
Then he faltered, her voice shaking with emotion. Despite the joy of their reunion, none of them had recovered from the stunning shock of what had happened to the Cobalt Squadron.
You're so right, Paige. Venny finished, with feeling. Working together, it's what we do best. Our ships, Hammer and Cutter. We were the first two in... Those starfighters should have easily beaten us both. Or one of us, anyway. But you protected us. You gave us the chance we needed to escape.
Paige didn't answer right away, but Rose felt her sister's arm tightening around her waist, and she knew that Paige had something on her mind. Something that had struck her very suddenly.
What's up? Rose asked quietly.
It was what you said about how we worked together, Venny, Paige said slowly. You said our cover gave you the chance to escape.
I guess you just did what a fighter escort would have done, Venny said. You did what I'd have done if I'd been flying a starfighter. But of course I'm not flying a starfighter. And we don't have a fighter escort. And we're not going to get one either.
But we could protect each other, said Paige.
I mean, obviously we do that anyway. But maybe we could use a little strategy and do it better. Maybe we could do it aggressively. On purpose.
How do you mean? Venny asked, intrigued. Rose had seen the wheels turning like this in Paige's mind before. Paige's ability to seize on a little thing and turn it into a strategic plan was what had gotten them out of the Automox system alive.
Here's the thing, said Paige. Today we entered Atera Bravo's orbit in an orderly parade, predictable as planets lining up around a star. So one way we could avoid the enemy picking us off in line is to split up. Not fly as a squadron. Everyone approached the target from a different position.
That's a little suicidal, Rose pointed out. Doesn't it leave the forts without any protection?
Yeah, but what if we went in pairs? Fossil thinks they purposefully let our ship go because they were hoping to track it. What if we went in pairs with the first ship going in as a kind of decoy to draw the attention away from the other? The very first ship could be empty. Then it would be faster and more maneuverable, and it could distract the TIEs while the second ship made a drop. Maybe on the other side of the planet.